Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll ask the Minnesota National Guard's top doctor what it takes to keep the force medically ready to deploy with all of the stress and risk of military life, and we'll meet with the adjutant of the American Veterans Association. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
We are coming off the heels of Hire a Veteran Month. Not only did Governor Dayton proclaim July Hire a Veteran Month, once again, the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development hosted a tremendous job fair. When President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed the GI Bill into law in 1944, he observed that more than anything else, American service members wanted the assurance of satisfactory employment upon their return to civilian life. Decades later, that remains true. Veterans today desire the same economic opportunities. They bring to the modern workplace skills, education, leadership, maturity, and dedication they have learned in their military service. Proactive events like the Governor's Hire a Veteran Focus and DEED's job fairs provide awareness and opportunities for unemployed service members. They also encourage all state businesses to provide employment opportunities to those who have served our nation in the armed forces. The dedication to employing our veterans is ongoing. I encourage you to learn about what veteran employment opportunities exist by visiting positivelyminnesota.com/veterans.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Joining me now from the Minnesota National Guard is the State Surgeon, Dr. Colonel Joseph Burns. Doctor, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
You know, Doctor, I didn't ask you this before you came on the air. Should I refer to you as Colonel or Doctor?
I answer to a lot of things. My wife uses other words that aren't even listed there, but either will do.
This is a family show, sir, so we probably shouldn't go there.
Absolutely.
Colonel, can you tell us a little bit about your military career? How long have you been in the military?
I joined the National Guard as a medical student many years ago and was in the Guard for about 10 years. And then I actually got out briefly. I had a roughly two-year break in service because of the stress of practice at the time. And it took just a short time for me to realize that I missed seeing soldiers, taking care of soldiers. So I returned to the National Guard and now have had over 20 years with it, and it seems like I just began.
And, sir, during that same time, you went to medical school and became, you now are an ER doctor, is that correct?
Correct. I work full-time in an emergency room.
And, Doctor, I understand you've been deployed once or twice.
Actually, I've had three deployments, one to Bosnia, two to Iraq, and each one with a different level of intensity and activity.
So early on in those missions, things were a little more intense, and towards the end it was a little bit calmer, I would assume.
That's correct.
Sir, can you tell us what does the state surgeon do in the Minnesota National Guard?
Well, although the title is surgeon, I don't do surgery. Most military doctors are referred to as some type of surgeon, but I function like the chief medical officer for the Army National Guard. Much of what I do relates to creating policies, processes for evaluating soldiers, taking care of soldiers, looking at retainability of soldiers and ways to keep a healthy Army force.
Sir, we've seen since September 11, 2001, that our Minnesota National Guard Army and Air Forces have been deployed repeatedly over and over and over again. A lot of them have gone out 3-4 times, and yet they reenlist and they stick with it, and they're doing a great job. And we've also heard and seen that their readiness status is superb. How does that impact your job as the state surgeon for the Minnesota Army National Guard?
We look at soldiers regularly, and the idea is to maintain their readiness, which helps their unit readiness, too. Many people have been deployed. Many people have had injuries of one type or another, but the majority of the soldiers keep on serving. And in Minnesota, there's a strong willingness to serve. That's one of the hallmarks of being in the upper Midwest. So even when people have had things happen that were bad, the majority of them hope to stay on and continue to serve.
We're speaking with Colonel Joseph Burns, the state surgeon for the Minnesota National Guard, on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, are there certain criteria that all of your soldiers in the Minnesota Army National Guard have to meet on a periodic basis to prove that they're up to snuff?
The biggest factor is, can they do their military job? And that's different for everybody. Someone who is a combat infantryman, they're walking, moving around, their physical requirements are very different than someone who is an accountant and is rarely outside. So it's similar, but it's different for every soldier. And things that might be disqualifying for somebody who's physically active out on the ground might not affect somebody who has more of an inside job.
Colonel, I'm curious. When I was in the Air Force 40 years ago, my fellow airmen that wanted to stay in and make a career out of it, were a bit reluctant to report any problems, whether they were physical or mental. I understand that that's changed a little bit today because the culture has changed somewhat. And if they're experiencing trouble, they know that they can get help and they can still stay in the service. Is that correct?
That is true. There still is, and probably always will be, some hesitance of service members, concern that if they say something that maybe they'll be kicked out. But our goal, my goal in looking at soldiers and soldiers' health and readiness, the goal is we hope to retain people. We hope they can continue to serve. When you have someone who's trained and motivated, you hate to lose that. But there are some conditions where soldiers are sometimes hesitant to say anything, mental health conditions being one. All we can do is encourage them to come forward, because then we know that those conditions are getting addressed or addressed properly. Just this week when I met with a couple people, they've had care through the VA and some other systems, and for their particular conditions, there were actually a couple of things I suggested they ask their doctors about that would help them. It's not something that I intervened directly in, but I think in both of those scenarios, the soldier will feel better if they can get some adjustments to their care.
So we've recognized we've invested a lot of time and energy and money in developing these soldiers and getting them trained in, and we just assume if they're good and they're having problems, let's help them through those problems and keep them in the service, because now they know what they're doing.
That's correct. We saw that overseas, especially with the first deployment through Iraq. If we had soldiers that needed to go elsewhere in the Middle East for some specialty evaluations, frequently at the end of those, the soldier might have had an option to go home or come back to where they had been stationed before. Almost all of them said they wanted to come back, and the people at the other end of the phone line couldn't understand that. But that reflects, again, the work ethic of the part of the country we're in.
And go back and keep supporting your buddies, your battle buddies, and get the job done.
That's correct.
Sir, when your soldiers enlist, they're for a specific number of years, and then they come up and they either get out or they reenlist. When they reenlist, do they go through a medical exam to make sure that they're still ready and able to do the jobs?
That's not part of their reenlistment specifically. Part of what we do is look at soldiers every year as a way of assessing their health. So it's something that's an ongoing process. It's not a periodic thing that may come up as a showstopper for somebody who is looking to reenlist or not.
So you're pretty much up to snuff, and they're either medically qualified or not, and unless they report a problem, that you just go through your normal procedures.
Yes.
Colonel, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little more about some of these deployments and their effect on our soldiers. We're speaking to Minnesota National Guard State Surgeon Colonel Joseph Burns on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been joined today by the State Surgeon of the Minnesota National Guard, Colonel Joseph Burns. Colonel, we've been talking about the fact that you are the head doctor within the Minnesota National Guard. I'm curious, how many medical personnel do we have in the Minnesota National Guard, and how are they organized?
We have a number of people, some doctors, some physicians' assistants. We have nurses. We have one physical therapist, and most of them are spread out throughout the state. That's a difficult thing for us sometime when we would like to get everybody together and have update meetings, et cetera. They're from the top of the state to the bottom and east to west. Some are part of individual medical units. A number of people are assigned directly to a line operational unit. Ideally, every battalion-sized command would have a doctor or a physician's assistant, sometimes both. We don't yet. We're still working on that. But the effect of it is that people are spread out throughout the state to try and work on readiness of the force, health of the force.
So, sir, you're the head doctor, the head officer on the Army side of
correct.
The Minnesota National Guard, and you have a counterpart on the air side.
That's correct.
And you've been deployed several times. I'm curious about this war, the Iraq-Afghanistan. We've heard that the signature injuries of the war are brain traumatic brain injuries and PTSD. What are you seeing? What issues have you been seeing in the last 10, 12 years?
Those two conditions in particular, the brain injury and PTSD, have been very significant. One of the things we've learned with regard to brain injury is that mild brain injury doesn't show up on tests. What it shows up in is as function. And if someone was shot in the head, it would be very easy to look and see a hole and blood and everything else. That's very easy to deal with. Somebody that has had a bump to the head, a blunt injury, it's a metabolic problem. It's not a structural problem. And there are no blood tests, there are no images that we can do that say, yep, this is what you have. What you have is somebody who doesn't think the same way. Maybe they have intermittent headaches. There are lots of parts that are soft symptoms, for lack of a better term. You can't put a meter on it. You can't measure it. But when you talk with a soldier, you can tell that it's there. One of the most important things for people who have had mild brain injury afterwards is what we call brain rest. If you sprained your ankle, we would tell you to rest your ankle. Don't walk on it. Don't jump on it. Put ice on it. Initially, after a head injury, brain rest is an important part of what happens nowadays, and that is a result of discovering what worked and didn't work with soldiers over this last decade of combat.
How in the world do you rest your brain, sir?
It's difficult, and I think the younger you are, it's much more difficult. How do you tell a 20-year-old that you can't text, you can't do video games, you can't get on the computer, you can't drive well, things that involve eye-hand coordination? If you're doing that, you're not resting your brain. So it's not always an easy sell. PTSD is very much a part of people who have been in combat, and PTSD has always been present. In World War II, they just didn't have a name for it. the men of the Band of Brothers, if you watch the series from that and the interviews conducted as part of that series, many of them described symptoms then of what we now know as post-traumatic stress disorder.
I think they called it battle fatigue.
That's right. A different name, but functionally it was the same thing. The advantage of many years of combat and therapy is that we have more of an idea of what helps now in terms of psychological intervention, in terms of medication. And an interesting question that comes up is, are we overdiagnosing PTSD in service members? The answer is no. And a large civilian trauma study that was completed a few years ago looked at patients that had been in some type of injury that required an operation. They went back to those patients a year after their injury and examined them for PTSD symptoms. And the proportion of people with symptoms was virtually identical to the military number. It's in the low 20s. So, no, it's not inappropriately diagnosed.
We're speaking with the state surgeon for the Minnesota Army National Guard, Colonel Joseph Burns, on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, it seems history shows us that every time we go to war, we make serious medical advances. But it seems like the last 10, 12 years that our service members are surviving injuries we didn't survive before. How difficult does that make your job?
Well, the good news is that they do survive many severe battle injuries. They often survive with severe limitations, where 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, someone might have been killed. Now, people have a lot of arm and leg injury as a result of blasts or other penetrating trauma. But we know that there's more technology to deal with that now. The advances in artificial limbs have made a big difference for people, and that's even in the last decade has changed quite a bit.
Sir, if our soldiers come back and they're wounded, and let's say they've lost a limb and they get one of today's state-of-the-art prosthetic devices, do they have the option to stay in the service?
It depends on their particular job and what their level of function is. Those are determined by what are called medical evaluation boards, and anyone who has become injured in the line of duty, typically, if we're not sure if they can stay in the military, they're directed toward one of those boards. Now, currently, there are thousands of soldiers waiting to go through those boards. It takes a while to assemble all of the data. It takes a while to go and have that reviewed. But some people are retainable, and it depends on what they do and their level of function.
Are you finding a lot of Minnesota National Guard soldiers that want to get back to their units? They want to stay with their buddies? They want to keep moving on even if they were injured?
Most of the time they do, and we see that over and over again. There's a level of cohesiveness that goes with the units, and I think it's part of a reflection of where we live in the upper Midwest. There, most of the time, if they can, they'd like to stay on.
Sir, if our listeners were interested in a medical career in the Minnesota National Guard, what would you tell them?
I recommend it. At any point in history, the military has never had enough people serving in healthcare positions. You could look at the Civil War, and they were short doctors then. Now, doctors, dentists, nurses, physical therapists, physicians, assistants, nurse practitioners on the reserve side, the National Guard side, and the active duty side. They have never, and likely will never have enough of them. If people are interested, we would encourage them to contact one of the recruiters. People don't do military medicine for financial reasons. We all could earn more if we worked harder at our civilian job. Generally, the people who come into military medicine positions are doing it for reasons other than pay. They want to serve. They want to make a difference in other ways. And if the listeners have a bent in that direction, we'd be happy to talk to them.
Sir, I understand there's some pretty good programs to help young people get through medical school and some of those things if they join the Minnesota Guard.
That's true. And there's help with tuition and other books, other living expenses that can help them get through school. I graduated from school many years ago, and I thought it was expensive then. I have a son who just finished training, and he has almost $300,000 worth of medical school debt. So if through military funding support for an interested student or someone somewhere along in the training pipeline, it can be helpful.
Sir, we just got a few seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners about from the state surgeon of the Minnesota Army National Guard?
Well, we appreciate the chance to have you hear about the soldiers of the state. It's important to remember that everybody who serves sacrifices something, and it doesn't mean that it's physical, but there's a lot of dedication out there, and you don't have to do a lot of special things for them except say thank you when you see them.
Colonel, I want to thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
You're welcome.
It was Colonel Joseph Burns, the state surgeon for the Minnesota Army National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to meet the Adjutant and Executive Director of the American Veterans Association. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
Over the last few years, in an effort to engage veterans throughout the state, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs has adopted the use of multiple social media platforms. These tools help us achieve our mission with the goal to increase communication between veterans and our department. Technology is constantly changing, and we must adapt to remain at the forefront of serving our veterans. Face-to-face contact is still very important to our agency and the veterans and families we serve, but the power of communicating online is substantial as well. I encourage you to check out our Facebook page, Twitter feed, YouTube channel, Flickr page, LinkedIn page, visit our blog, and sign up for updates from our department. To connect to MDVA, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org and click on the social media icons in the upper left-hand corner of the page. See you online.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Kelly Wen, who is the Adjutant and Executive Director of the American Veterans Association Department of Minnesota. Kelly, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Kelly, I understand you're a veteran.
Yes, I am.
Can you tell us a little bit about your military career?
I was in the Army from September of 1988 through November of 1990, and I was in Fort Hood, Jackson, South Carolina, then Redstone Arsenal in Alabama, Fort Hood in Texas, and for my overseas per DOD, I was in Alaska in Anchorage.
You moved around in a short period of time, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Kelly, can you tell us, when did you get involved with the American Veterans Association?
I became a member in the mid-90s with the American Veterans AMVETS Post 1 out of Mendota. And towards the end of the 90s, I became involved with the Department of AMVETS. And I have been their adjutant and office manager, executive director since about 2000.
So when you say department, that's the state level.
State, yes.
Okay. And how did you of all the veteran service organizations, there's 9 authorized in the state of Minnesota, how did you get to AMVETS?
I am, because my overseas was Alaska, I am really not eligible for the VFW, and I was never in a war. I was in during times of war, so I am eligible for the American Legion, but the American Veterans encompasses all of the military, from all military veterans that have served or are honorably serving before September 15th, 1940.
So when we look at AMVETS, it's more all-inclusive as opposed to VFW is for war veterans, DAV is for disabled veterans, Jewish war veterans speaks for itself, POW right. speaks for itself, but AMVETS lets everybody in that's been in the armed forces, in the United States Armed Forces, since World War II.
Correct.
Okay, and what is the mission of the American Veterans Association?
The mission for our American veterans is veterans help veterans serving veterans, and we help their families and our communities.
So the AMVETS in Minnesota does not have any posts like the VFW or the Legion.
Correct.
How many members do you have here in Minnesota?
We have just over 1,200.
1,200 members in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And do they get together for meetings? Do you have newsletters? How do you communicate?
We have newsletters per post, but we also have a website on for our department. It's mn-amvets.org that has all of the information for our AMVETS and those wishing to know more, those wishing to join, what the local posts throughout the state are doing, and what the department is doing.
And we'll have a link to your website on our website for any of our listeners who've missed that. So your mission is to help veterans and their families to help them with local, state, and federal programs that are available? Do you provide information? Is that what you do?
Correct. Yes.
So can you give me an example? What would if a typical veteran had some kind of problem and called you up, what might it be and how do you help them?
We would refer them to our National Service Officer for the state of Minnesota. He's located out of Fargo, North Dakota. And then we would receive a copy of any of their claims that they had submitted, and we'd retain those as they move forward with their own.
We're speaking with Kelly Wen, the Adjutant and Executive Director of the American Veterans Association on Minnesota Military Radio. Kelly, can you give me an example of a couple of different types? What types of issues do veterans call up and need help with?
They usually need help with being homeless or needing money or housing to get back on their feet when they return back from their service in, and sometimes it's other veterans that have been out of the service for some time that are looking for help to pay some of their bills, to receive more medical information that they don't feel that they're receiving as of yet.
So let's say a homeless veteran calls you up and he needs some help. Do you coordinate then to get them to Minnesota Assistant Council for Veterans, MACV?
MACV, correct.
Okay, and then if they call and they've got some kind of a claim or an issue, do you coordinate and get them over to the county veteran service officers for help as well?
Yes, we would.
So you serve as kind of as a clearinghouse. If veterans have issues and they want to call you, you'll get them to the appropriate agency that can take care of the issue.
Yes, we will.
Yes, we will. That sounds like a pretty good job. Do you enjoy your job every day?
Yes, I do.
All right. Well, you've been the adjutant for a number of years, but you were also the commander.
Yes, I was the first female commander of the Department of Minnesota from 2011 and 2012.
And what type of duties came with that post?
It was mainly delegation and going to national functions and talking with our national commanders and past commanders all of our officers have functions, but mine is for, as being a commander, it's more of a delegation position.
Now, do the AMVINs have some events each year?
Yes, we do.
What type of events?
Well, we will be going out to the state fair in just a few weeks. We have a booth up in the Veterans Building, and then on Veterans Day, we go with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs out to Inver Grove Heights for their annual Veterans Day function that they have every year, and then our meetings and such.
Kelly, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about the Commander's Task Force a little bit. We've been talking to Kelly Wynn, the Adjutant and Executive Director of the American Veterans Association on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been joined in this segment by Kelly Wynn, the Adjutant and Executive Director of the American Veterans Association, also known as AMVETS. Kelly, you served as commander a couple of years ago, and as commander of AMVETS, you attended what's called the Commander's Task Force. Can you tell us about that?
The Commander's Task Force is comprised of 9 federally chartered veterans organizations that comprise the Commander's Task Force, I guess. And we promote legislative initiatives and bring them to our legislators each year. Each year, being that most of the veterans organizations changes hands of commanders, it changes just a little technically each year. But our drive towards our initiatives, for our legislative initiatives, still remains the same for our veterans and for those service people that are coming home or are continuing on in their service careers in getting legislation passed for the benefits of our veterans and the service people.
So the Commander's Task Force is made up of the department or state commanders of the 9 federally chartered veteran service organizations, such as the American Legion, the VFW, the DAV, Jewish War Veterans, POWs, and, of course, AMVETS, and there's a couple others in there.
Marine Corps Vets.
Marine Corps League, I think, is in there.
Or Marine Corps League and Vietnam Veterans.
Very good.
Yeah.
And those commanders usually change every year, so the makeup of the Commander's Task Force changes every year. But what doesn't change is, collectively, you represent a lot of veterans around the state, don't you?
Correct.
And collectively, you can work on some legislation to benefit veterans or to take care of some issues veterans are experiencing in Minnesota and promote that legislation up on Capitol Hill.
Yes, that is what we do there.
And I understand that this past session, we were successful in finishing up Phase 3 of the Veterans Home?
Yes, that is one that we've been pushing for a number of years.
Pretty important issue because it completes the campus and it ties everything together and turns that into the type of place that we all want it to be.
Yes, it's very nice.
And then I believe that the legislature also provided some additional funding for the Minnesota GI Bill, that's going to help an awful lot of people that have been serving overseas the last dozen years, isn't it?
That is correct.
So is it fair to say you enjoyed your time on the Commander's Task Force?
Like I said, we push and drive for our veterans up at the Hill, and we go up on Veterans Day on the Hill. We contact our representatives, and we promote other posts to contact their representatives so that they can get some of these initiatives in motion and put a fire under the legislators.
Big part of the veteran service organizations that a lot of people don't see is that work that happens behind the scenes, isn't it?
That is very correct.
Okay, we just got a few seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners about the American Veterans Association, AMVETS?
Just want to say that if you are a veteran and you are looking to help other veterans, you can contact our office at 651-293-1212 or our website.
And we'll have that posted on our Facebook, so it's easy to find.
Okay.
So if there are veterans out in Minnesota that want to join an all-inclusive organization, the American Veterans, or AMVETS, is the place to go. And your specific mission is to help veterans with issues.
Yes. Yes, it is.
All right, Kelly, I want to thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Kelly Wynn, the Adjutant and Executive Director of the American Veterans Association, AMVETS, on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard is their president, Tim Leonard.
Tim, hello, Tom.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi.
Good to have you back.
Thank you.
What are your Minnesota Patriot Guard riders up to lately?
Well, last month we had a busy month. We had 22 funeral missions. Three of them were active duty, unfortunately. Three welcome homes, two deployments, two memorials, and some what we call MERTs, which is the monthly individual reintegration training. We do the MERTs because we sometimes miss soldiers as they come in on the buses. So when they come to the MERTs, it's our second chance to make sure we catch everybody and welcome them home.
So in case you missed them the first time, when they came home, you can go back and see them on the 30, 60, 90-day reintegration training.
Yeah, we only do the 30 because that's the one where we'll catch them all.
Okay. So you've been busy as usual.
We have. You know, so far this month, we've had 7 funeral missions and 2 vet home events already. And what I'd like to talk about this week is vet homes visits. I'd like to get as many people out to the vets' homes as we can get, and they don't even have to be joined up in the Patriot Guard. If you look at our calendar at mnpatriotguard.org, you'll see where we have our vet homes visits, events. We have, at some of them, we'll have special things going on. Monte Carlo night we just had at St. Cloud. We have a barbecue and bike show at Minneapolis coming up here. That's kind of fun. Just show up, come out there, look on the calendar, come and visit some of the vets. I mean, the vets out there are they're fun.
Now there's veterans' homes around the state. Isn't there some up north as well?
Yes. We have one up in Silver Bay.
Mm-hmm.
We have one down in Laverne. We have one in Hastings, and there's one right in Minneapolis.
So do you schedule the veterans' events or the veterans' home events and then post them on your website?
We do.
And your website, once again, too?
Is mnpatriotguard.org.
Okay. Now, as usual, I have the question of the month. Who's eligible to be a Patriot Guard rider?
Anybody. Anybody that has respect for the military and what they do for us.
And all they need is a flag and a pole?
A flag, a pole, and a heart that understands what they have and what they give to us.
And all they have to do to sign up is go to your website.
Yes.
And click on a button, and they sign up just as easy as that.
Just as easy as that.
How many riders do we have in Minnesota?
Right now on our email list, there's about 6,000.
And they're divided up into different sections around the state?
We have the state divided up into 20 sectors. In that 20 sectors, we have a ride captain that communicates what's going on in that sector to that area and organizes the events. They'll sign somebody or get you going if you come out there. You come out with a flag, and they'll tell you where to stand and what's going on and take care of what you need to do, what we need to do to honor our veterans.
And once you sign up, then you get these emails that come out, and they explain the missions that are coming up, and you're not sure how many riders are going to show up, but they always do, don't they?
We never know how many. When we coach our ride captains for their very first mission, we always tell them that when you talk to somebody, you can only promise them one, and that'll be him.
And then we'll see how many show up.
I've never been disappointed.
And I hope you never are, Tim.
I had one mission that was down in northeast Minneapolis one time, and it was a 12-hour lead time. I posted it at 9 o'clock at night, and the mission was for 9 o'clock in the morning. I expected that I'd be the only one there. I put it on the calendar. I didn't even have a chance to put it on the email. I put it on the calendar. I come up over the hill as we're going up on University. I come up over the hill, and as I peeked the hill, I looked down there. They were already all lined up around the funeral home.
They didn't even wait for you to get them in
order. They didn't even wait for me to get there.
That'd be a good feeling, too.
It was. I had goosebumps all the way down the hill.
Jim, I want to thank you for coming to the office or into the studio and joining us again today.
Oh, it's an honor. It always is.
Keep up the great work out there.
We do, and thank you.
That was Tim Leonhardt from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. Before we go, there are a few upcoming events we'd like to mention. First, the first annual Golf for Vets Scramble will take place at Victory Links in Blaine, Minnesota on August 23rd. Golf for Vets is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that provides a recreational outreach wellness program for veterans. And if you've served in a combat zone during 2009 and haven't claimed your Minnesota state tax credit, the deadline is quickly approaching. The credit is worth $150 to $120 per month of service, and it will expire October 15th. More than 2,300 eligible veterans have yet to claim this credit. And if you're a military retiree, this year's Joint Retiree Appreciation Day is coming up soon. It'll be on the September 28th this year in Prior Lake. In addition to being a great opportunity to meet your fellow retirees, organizers will also be providing classes on all of the latest retiree benefits to include the new Affordable Health Care Act effects on you. And last, the third annual Gold Star Family Weekend will be held August 23rd to 25th at Camp Ripley, just north of Little Falls. Gold Star families, families who have lost a loved one or gave their life in Iraq, Afghanistan, Vietnam, Korea, or any other conflict, are invited to the special weekend of honor, remember, and cherish the lives of those loved ones. For more information on these and other upcoming events, simply visit us on Facebook. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or suggestion for a topic you'd like us to discuss, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel Joseph Burns, Kelly Wen from AMVETS, Tim Leonhardt from the Minnesota Patriot Guard, Commissioner Larry Shelato of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we record the show live from the 4th Annual Minnesota Military Family Foundation Golf Classic at Tartan Park and discover how they are helping Minnesota military families. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.